connecting sleep to sports isn't easy, but here goes. Mattress Firm is America's neighborhood mattress store, and it should be your goal to check out the deals they have going on every day. Their mattresses are softer than your rival team's defense. They get a 10 out of 10. You'll love your new bed. Okay, all terrible dad jokes aside, head to mattressfirm.com/podcast and stretch your budget further than a gymnast before a floor routine. Free agency comes roaring in. Kirk Cousins to Minnesota, Case Keenum to Denver as the quarterback dominoes fall. Plus, the end of Seattle's Legion of Boom and what Richard Sherman brings to San Francisco. Sammy Watkins, Allen Robinson, and Jimmy Graham find new homes and big money. So many more signings. We're breaking them all down on the MMQB 10 Things podcast. Hello and welcome to the MMQB 10 Things podcast, the free agent reaction edition. Let's call it that. That sounds kind of not terrible. Big signings today. I'll put the disclaimer up top because really every good podcast starts with a lengthy disclaimer. We are currently, as we tape this, 24 hours into the legal tampering period. So we're going to be as up to date as we can here. We might not have literally every signing you know by the time you are listening to this. But of course, in a world where Josh McDaniels is still a Patriots assistant coach, we have to say none of these deals are finalized. That can't happen until later in the week. We are going to talk about them as if they are, though. These are all reported deals that are going to go down, and we feel confident that 99.9% of them will. Is that okay with you, Andy? Is that an okay disclaimer?
I am fine with that. I think the other disclaimer you need to issue, more to me than anyone, I guess, and I guess I already know about it because I know about it, but it's basically one giant lightning round show here, isn't it? I mean, we're going to go through a lot of guys quick hit style.
Yep, we are going to go through everyone who basically signed, and we're also going back to some of the guys who got traded late last week. So we got a lot of stuff to touch on, and I should have said at the top, I don't think I did, I'm Gary Gramling and you're Andy Benoit. Did I say that? I didn't say that.
No, that's nice. So they know now they know who's listening. And you know, one other disclaimer before we get rolling.
Yep.
I don't mean to, we're probably going to be a little negative on some of these guys because that's the nature of free agency. A lot of these guys got here by being some sort of a damaged good, and I just don't. I guess I'm apologizing up front because I don't mean to be negative, and we're not going to be all negative. But if we got to get through everyone and get to the bottom line of this, it's going to have a negative tenor, and I'm not a big fan of that. But that's the reality of it.
Some guys will have a negative tenor, not all of them. We can be optimistic in a couple of spots.
I'm going to do my best.
All right. Well, I think that's it for the disclaimer portion of today's show. Let's get to it. We're going to start with the quarterbacks. Obviously, the biggest chip in the free agency period has fallen. This is Kirk Cousins going to the Vikings, gets the fully guaranteed three-year deal. That's actually one more disclaimer we should put out. We don't have details on all the contracts. We only have the links between player and team for the most part, as well as some very vague agent leaked type of details. But Kirk Cousins, Minnesota Vikings, you gotta love this. You like everything about this. You like it for Cousins. You like it for the Vikings.
I get that. Here's exactly what I think this deal was.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you told me I have to love it, so well, I guess you're the boss.
I was going to say, I thought that was the easiest one because you've been saying, well, Kirk Cousins, Minnesota Vikings, that makes the most sense. You've been saying that since like mid-February, so I figured this was the one that you would be really cheery about.
Yeah, it is, because I knew the Vikings were interested in him right up front. I talked to a lot of their people about Kirk Cousins, and here's the organization's thinking on this. We are on the doorstep of a Super Bowl, and that's an important place to be. That doesn't happen often, and we don't know how long our time here on that doorstep will be, and we got to get through that door somehow. And with Case Keenum, he was great last year, and he got us close to the door, and he wasn't the reason we didn't get through it, but we aren't completely sure he can do it again. We think he can. We hope he can. But we've always said, Gary, your plan cannot be to catch lightning in a bottle twice. Mm-hmm. So we're not completely sure. We are a little more sure about what Kirk Cousins is because he has 3 years of starting experience and Keenum only has one. So we're going to pay the premium for Cousins, who basically is an insurance policy of stability at the quarterback position. And we're going to believe that our system and the talent around him and then playing opposite our loaded, dominant defense, that's going to be enough. And if we are solid at QB, we're a Super Bowl contender. If we're not, then we're like everyone else. We're not a Super Bowl contender. So Kirk Cousins amounts to the idea of, well, does he change the Vikings? Not really. I mean, yes, it changes because you're a quarterback, and that's an important position, mm-hmm. so there'll be some new wrinkles. But it's more just he's a very, very expensive insurance policy. We could debate the merits of that, but their thinking is you don't mess around when the Super Bowl's this close.
All right. Okay. I guess that could have been a little more you could have been a little more giddy about it, but I like that breakdown.
Wow. Well, let's remember, just because Kirk Cousins hit the market doesn't mean he's all of a sudden one of the 8 or 9 best QBs in the NFL. He's still probably number 14 to 18, depending on your preference of style.
Yes.
And that's what he is. But they believe that's enough in Minnesota. And usually that's not. But in their case, and we just saw it last year, that is enough. They are very contenders in the NFC.
Yeah, and I think that conversation comes up a lot, especially with the guys who are floating around in the market this year. Can you win a title with them? Well, you can win a title with pretty much anyone. I mean, Trent Dilfer has won a title. Nick Foles came off the bench and won a title. Jeff Hostetler has won a title. I mean, guys win titles if you have the greatness around them, and certainly the Vikings have that, and they're going to be right there 1-1A with the Eagles in the NFC next year, and then obviously you got you're going to deal with Tom Brady, maybe the Jaguars, maybe the Steelers on the AFC side. So they are firmly in that 5 or 6 team championship contender realm right now. And should mention, Cousins, fully guaranteed 3-year deal. We know those details. And that would actually put him back on the market for another monster deal at age 32, which I believe would also be the first year of the new CBA. So he is going to make a lot of money if you were worried about Kirk Cousins.
He's getting some good advice, and the advice always circles back to the same caveat, which is, Kirk, you can do this and be aggressive if you're willing to bet on yourself. Kirk, you can sign your franchise tender right away and take that big chunk of money for 1 year if you believe you'll get better and not get injured. He did that twice, and now here he is betting on himself yet again. Guys that tend to – I remember I spent the free agency day last year at Tony Jefferson, and he took a short deal with Baltimore so that he can be a free agent when he's 28. And Jefferson was a guy who came out of college early and came out after his junior season thinking his stock was high now. Some advice said maybe you shouldn't do that, but he was taking it. He said, I'm gambling on myself. Guys that gamble on themselves tend to stay that way for the rest of their lives. Richard Sherman just did it too. We'll talk about him a little later.
Yep, and really, 3-year guaranteed deal. A lot of these deals, you know, the ones with all the window dressing and the huge escalators and all that, a lot of these big deals end up being 3 years anyway. That seems to be sort of the sweet spot. So this kind of is, I don't know, it's an atypical deal the way it's structured, but it probably has a pretty typical outcome.
Yeah, so, it just changes the accounting side and how you structure the prorated parts of the deal and all these the details of it, which will be important with Minnesota because they have so many of their own guys they have to re-sign at some point.
Yeah.
But that's a discussion we can have another day.
Yep. For now, let's talk about Case Keenum. The former Viking goes to the Broncos. I'm going to pat myself on the bat for wildly predicting this back in November, and it came to fruition. So I'm like 1 for 8,000 in the 27 calendar year. But Keenum to the Broncos, this to me feels kind of like, I mean, one, he was the number 2 quarterback on the market. So if they weren't going to get Kirk Cousins, Case Keenum made all the sense in the world. But the Broncos, they have the 5 pick, and this doesn't preclude them from taking one of the quarterbacks with the 5th pick if there's a guy they like there. For the long term, Keenum is going to be getting it. It's a deal that's going to be in like I believe it's $36 million over 2 years. So it's not it's obviously much less than what Cousins is getting and what the guys at the top of the market are getting. But this is it's something that had to happen for a team that just couldn't stomach another year with a young quarterback under center. I mean, this gives them some assurances, the ability to sort of lay your head down, to rest at the end of the night, knowing that Case Keenum is probably not going to, even if he's not what he was in 2017, he's not going to completely implode, which is what they've had at that position the last couple years.
Yeah, and let's remember, their window is still open, too. They have a great defense, a talented one. Mm-hmm. Now, it's probably not quite what it was a few years ago. Some of that's age is maybe setting in. They've got some personnel changes, but it's still a top five to top 10 defense, and that means something. So there's also the factor that they believe Keenum can get them somewhere this year. In the meantime, it has some upside. And the other thing to remember is, if Keenum is in a system that has a balance between the run and pass game, and when we say that, we don't just mean, oh, you run the ball and then you pass it an equal number of times and here you go. We also mean your passing concepts come out of your running concepts. You're passing out of your run formations. You're throwing the ball on first and second down at times. There's a marriage and a harmony between your run and pass game. If you have that, I think Keenum can be a pretty good distributor for your offense. And Broncos offensive coordinator Bill Musgrave, that's always been his specialty. That's what he did so well with Derek Carr and the Raiders a few years ago, marrying your run and pass game. So this is a good opportunity, a good situation for Keenum.
Sam Bradford goes to the Cardinals. Cardinals were linked to Cousins, and there are some, you know, Cousins has family down there. Maybe he was going to opt to head down there. That was not the case. Sam Bradford, as we said, probably the most purely talented quarterback in this free agent class, but obviously you can't trust him to play, I don't know, even 8 games, let alone 16. So another shoe will have to drop here as far as what the Cardinals are doing with their number 2 quarterback spot. But Sam Bradford will start anywhere between 1 and 16 games for the Arizona Cardinals in 2018, it looks like.
And remember, the Cardinals literally had no QBs. All their guys are free agents entering the offseason. So they had to get somebody, and their thinking was, we want to get someone who's decent, but we're not going to break the bank for anybody, and Sam Bradford's the roll of the dice. They're still in the quarterback market because of, as you talked about, his injuries and what can you get from him. But this was a decent first step for a team that had to make a move at that position.
Yeah, the injuries and playing behind that line, I feel like, just exacerbate what's going to happen with him.
Yeah, that's an offense in total rebuild mode. They have their wide receivers are free agents with the exception of Larry Fitzgerald. They could probably use a tight end. They need some help and alterations along the O-line. David Johnson will be back. That's a huge, huge plus, of course. Mm-hmm. But that offense, that is not the Vikings where they were one piece away from being a complete team. That's the antithesis of that.
Yeah. One more to mention. It's not quite as finalized as we'd like it to be, but Teddy Bridgewater, it has been strongly linked, let's say, to the New York Jets. So that would be another quarterback domino off the board here. That's quite a metaphor right there. Do dominoes fall off the board?
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know if it works that way. I don't think it's a domino. By the way, whenever I play domino, it's the only game that I explicitly cheat at, because there's nothing else to do in dominoes. You sit there, it takes almost no brain power, very little strategy. So the only thrill and thinking process is if you cheat, in my opinion. And now if you have them up on the board, I don't know how that works. I don't think Bridgewater is a domino, though, because if he tips over, he doesn't touch another domino. He's in and of himself. He doesn't move the meter. The Jets are no less in the QB market now than they were before, because he's a backup QB, and especially in that situation where there's no one around him on offense, and you're talking about inclement weather in New York versus the dome in Minnesota for a guy with limited arm strength. I don't think this moves the meter one bit, other than the Jets had a quarterback roster spot to fill out.
Well, we're gonna talk about at least one more quarterback on the show. I don't think any of the guys, you know, Cousins going to the Vikings. Yes, they're set. They have their starter. Keenum's gonna start in 2018. I don't really think this stops the Broncos from taking a quarterback in the draft if they want one. So it's almost like if you've been following the draft, there's a big four. You could say maybe a big five if you want to put Lamar Jackson in there. I do think Jackson will sneak into the first round, but I don't think he's in the running for those, you know, to be a top 10 or top 5 spot. But there are 7 or 8 teams in the top half of the first round who are in the quarterback draft market, and that really nothing changed today. Maybe the Broncos are a little more reluctant, but you know, it's still it's a lot of teams going for those four quarterbacks, and if you're the Colts right now, you can basically name your price on that number three pick, or maybe even the Giants. The Giants, we'll talk about them a little bit later, missed out on some offensive linemen. Maybe they want to trade down, get assets, stick with Eli for another year, and try and build around him in 2018, 2019. But
Well, and not to get off topic, but if we're talking about trading up for a QB, which someone's going to do in this draft, and the Colts mm-hmm. are part of that, I'd strongly consider having Jacoby Brissett in the trade equation and trading up to get that QB rather than, I don't know yeah. much about these guys in the draft, but we've talked about Brissett and how much we like him. So just something else to keep in mind. I don't know if the Colts would want to do that depending on where Andrew Luck is. Maybe they need the insurance with Brissett, but we'll find out.
Yeah. And real quick before we move on to the guys who maybe aren't quarterbacks, we are going to do a mailbag show. It's going to depend on how the next couple days of free agency play out. We're going to come out on Monday with our regular timing. I have a feeling that's going to be free agency part two. We might do some mailbag questions in it if it's kind of a light couple of days. But if we don't do it on Monday, we'll do it the following Monday. And so send those questions in. Free agency related or whatever you got. We'll get to as many questions as we can. Send them to talkback@themmqb.com. Put podcast somewhere in the subject line. That would be very helpful. Or you can get us on Twitter, gramling_si, Andy_Benoit, or we are both on Facebook if you want to send it that way. But let's turn back the clock a little bit to last week. And Saturday and Friday, Richard Sherman let go by the Seahawks, ends up inking a incentive-laden deal to join the 49ers. So I guess my question to you, Andy, and there's just a ton of questions with Sherman, age 30 season, coming off the Achilles. To you, is he the kind of guy who might age well? It's tough to age well no matter what style of cornerback you are. But is he a guy who might age well? We've talked about sort of the spatial awareness to play, be sort of more of a cover three type of corner. He's obviously physical enough. He'll come up and hit. He'll help you in run support. Is he a guy who ages better than maybe, say, Darrelle Revis?
I think 3 years ago, I probably would have said yes. The last couple seasons at times, and Sherman, when I went back and watched it carefully, went through my film notes more carefully, he's been better than he appears on the surface, I think. But his change of direction ability the last few years has wavered at times. And I think some of that was the knee, but now we're talking about coming off Achilles injuries, two of them. That's a big deal.
Yeah.
So I'm not optimistic about it, but I would have said yes because of all the reasons you laid out there. His game has been predicated on technique and strength and his really good sense for playing the ball when it's in the air and using the boundary and using his help defenders. And theoretically, those are things that don't go away when you get older. I mean, everything's going to diminish a little bit, but we're not talking mm-hmm. about a guy who's like a Joe Hayden type, who's quick and twitchy, and he just is really good at following people around. That wasn't Sherman's game. So he has a chance to, and I hope he does. I'm not overly optimistic in the fact that Seattle moved on from him, and I know they're purging the roster, so maybe we set that aside, but I'd say the odds are 30-70 for Sherman.
Okay. We'll see. He negotiated his own contract, of course, and Pierre King had a very good column about it if you want to
that was a great
get
column,
the blow-by-blow
yeah.
there. It really was. Very interesting stuff, but lots of incentives. He's got to play well if he wants to collect the close to $40 million in that three-year deal that he negotiated. Also heading to San Francisco, Weston Richburg. I want to say a favorite of our show. I feel like
he's not John Jerry.
He's not John Jerry, but you couldn't get him all off that vaunted Giants offensive line.
What Richburg gives you, I think he'll have decent enough mobility. I think he's plus mobile, but it'll be interesting to see how he does in an outside zone scheme, which is what Shanahan's system is all about, the run and the pass game to a certain degree. He was very good in north and south movement at times with the Giants, and he gives you a good backfield screen game. When you have an athletic center, that's critical for you throwing running back screens and getting guys out in space. Usually, not always, but a lot of times teams rely on that position and build from there. So I'm optimistic on the Richburg signing as well. I think that's a good one, but we haven't seen him in an outside zone scheme before. So it's not a sure thing, but there's good reason for optimism.
Yeah. And we'll get to the sort of full dismantling of the Seahawks in a moment, but let's talk about the new team for another Seahawk who moves here. Michael Bennett traded to the Eagles. Andy, what did Bennett have left last year? I mean, he missed some time with injury. He's up there. He's on the wrong side of 30, obviously. What's left in the tank for him?
He didn't show up nearly as much on film a year ago as he did in previous seasons. But some of that, let's remember, he may have showed up more in those previous seasons than anyone else in the NFL. His initial get off and his multi-directional movement, he can get off in an east and west direction or a northeast, southwest, kind of whatever you want to say, at angles. He's hard to block because of that, and he looks like he's so much longer than he is. His physical measurements, his arm length is actually very normal, but when you watch him on film, he looks like he's got the wingspan of a pterodactyl sometimes. So he's always been quick and sharp with his technique, and those two things together made him a dominant player. Many in the NFL thought he was the most dominant guy on that vaunted Seahawks defense. I was surprised Seattle was so eager to move on from him because I didn't think his salary was out of control for this year. I think he's in the $4 to $5 million range. So I don't know if there's something else going on there or if they're just saying, let's say if we're going to turn the page, let's turn the page. But I think Philadelphia, who also got Haloti Ngata in free agency, I think they've gotten a lot better along their D-line, and their D-line already got them to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, the just backing up to Bennett really quick. I mean, he was saying late last season that they were going to move on from him, and you know, no one really believed it because it's not an out of control deal. It didn't feel like they needed to, but obviously they're sort of tearing the whole thing down there right now, and they're gonna hit the reset button. But basically the Eagles, Vinny Curry, while he's not officially out right now, he'll be out. They won't retain Bo Allen, I would imagine. And they basically add Michael Bennett and Haloti Ngata. And, you know, two veterans, obviously two older guys, but the way they rotate linemen, I mean, this seems like a pretty ideal situation for both those guys and obviously for the Eagles to bring in this much talent.
Let's not overlook the Vinny Curry part of that discussion because I'm going under the assumption that I've heard he might be out and it hasn't happened yet, so I'm thinking, well, maybe they'll find a way to keep him. If you sub out Vinny Curry and put in Michael Bennett, you've downgraded at this point of their careers. Vinny Curry is an excellent player, a really good inside and outside pass rusher. He's a big, important piece because let's also remember, oh, you're not liking it, huh? They're moving.
No,
that was
an interested,
Okay, that wasn't,
I'm going to allow it.
Okay, oh, good, thank you. They move their D linemen around a lot. They play them at defensive end and defensive tackle, and Curry was a big reason they were able to do that, and that's why Brandon Graham got to play D tackle and nickel, where he was a lot better, as it turns out. Fletcher Cox is another guy you move around. Curry, in some regards, Cox is their best D lineman. That's almost irrefutable, but in some regards, as a pass rusher, Curry's flexibility was a key and maybe even the fulcrum of some of their rush concepts. Now, Michael Bennett gives you that as well, but Michael Bennett's, we've talked wrong side of 30, he's not Vinny Curry right now. Vinny Curry's in his prime.
Yeah. Yeah. One more ad for Philly here. Daryl Worley comes in for Torrey Smith in a deal with the Panthers. So the Eagles they've certainly collected a lot of young cornerbacks now. And you figure they'll be able to find two decent starters out of them, especially with Sidney Jones coming back. Really didn't contribute as a rookie because of the torn Achilles. But, they got a lot of guys, and you figure they will find some good players out of them.
And Worley is probably here to replace Rasul Douglas, who is their number four corner. We're talking about luxury players now. And Torrey Smith, they realize what everyone else eventually comes to realize with Smith is that he's a track star and about nothing else. And that can help you a little bit, but that's not the stability you want at that position.
Yeah, we'll talk about him in a moment, actually. But for now, let's keep it in Seattle one more time. They did keep Bradley McDougal, so they have they have one of their safeties from last season back. But I mean, look, this is going to be a completely new team, really. I mean, they still have the two linebackers. I don't want to say this is a full rebuild. Bobby Wagner and KJ Wright are still two of the best in the NFL. Really, you can't be too bad when you have those two guys in your lineup. But you know, Sherman's gone. Earl Thomas still around, although he's reportedly being shopped. Cam Chancellor and Cliff Averill. I mean, those two guys, those are career threatening neck injuries, and really, it's probably, you know, if you were gonna place some money on it, you'd probably bet that both those guys have played their last games.
And that's who McDougal's replacing, is Cam Chancellor. McDougal did a nice job last year filling in. I think I liked him in Tampa Bay. I thought he was better in the box than people realized, and he could cover tight ends from an off coverage position pretty decently. But he's not Cam Chancellor. So it's like, this is higher in the rundown here than it needs to be. McDougal's not a difference maker for Seattle, other than maybe in the negative, just because he's replacing a guy who was borderline all-time great at his respective, his strong safety position.
Well, we're talking the end of Seattle here. We're talking Seattle in general, not just Bradley.
So you're fitting into the greater theme. This is not about Google. This is about the teardown of Seattle. It's a big teardown because they're going to let Sheldon Richardson probably get away. Yeah. Michael Bennett's gone. Just looking at their depth chart now, who's Jaron Reed, and he'll be a third-year defensive tackle and a rising one, in fact. And Frank Clark, those are really the only familiar names along the D-line right now.
Yeah, I mean, they spent a high pick on Malik McDowell last year, who was kind of exactly who a lot of teams thought they were. He, you know, came with some off-the-field concerns, and, you know, he sort of ran into that. So we'll see if they can get anything out of him. Obviously, Frank Clark was a similar sort of character risk that they took a couple years ago. But boy, they're banking on just a whole new cast of players now, and especially with the way the 49ers are rising and the way the Rams are on the rise, that's going to be maybe a tough year or two for the Seahawks. Sort of an unfamiliar position in that division for them.
Nice run though. I mean, it really was at some point. So 2012 to 2016, they were as good as any team in the NFL over that 5-year span.
Yeah, and really, it was just such an interesting team as well. You know, we talked about a little bit about it, you know, at the end of last season, the way they just sort of courted and sort of openly dealt with the kind of drama that other teams just work so hard to stifle and get out of their building. They sort of, that was their thing. That was their shtick. And it was just kind of fun to watch from afar.
Yeah, it worked for them. It wouldn't work for many teams, but it did work for them.
It did. Let's talk Cleveland Browns.
Why is everyone talking the Cleveland Browns? I was on vacation when these trades happened, but I was following the news and I was kind of aware that people were going nuts over the Cleveland Browns, including my buddy Connor Orr, who I think is as good as anyone I've seen in the industry.
I want to stop you real quick on Connor Orr. Connor Orr is a childhood, longtime diehard Browns fan. So this strikes close to his heart.
Yeah, but he was optimistic about it. If you would think as a Browns fan, he'd be jaded and say, "Oh, this stinks. We're not gonna get anything from these new guys." Why, as a team, they tried? Jarvis Landry is a very good player, an excellent guy, and I think you need more receivers around him, smarter receivers, quite frankly, because they don't have guys right now on that offense who can do pre-snap shifting and motion and diversify the scheme. They just have to line up and play because their receivers are so limited, and that was a big problem last year. If you insert Landry into the equation, that does change. Now you're a little more multiple offensively, but you have to have two or three other receivers who know what they're doing. So Landry's a good first step. That's what he is. The other two guys are backups. Why are we going nuts over the Browns trading for an up-and-down streaky corner who's now moving to safety in Demarius Randall and a backup QB who sometimes starts but is always trying to get out of the lineup by his coaches because he's really not very good, and Tyrod Taylor? I don't for the life of me understand what's so exciting about the Browns adding three players, two of them who come off the bench.
They got three players. They got three guys, Andy, and it was very exciting.
It's not
for
an
everyone.
NBA. It's not the NBA. They didn't trade half their starting lineup. All this. These guys are not different. It's not going to change anything. Other than Landry, nothing changes.
So this is what I'll say about it. we know there are a handful of players who basically passed on Cleveland's money in the last offseason. They didn't want to play for a team that was in the state that they were in. This is a way to get guys in. You trade for them, then they don't have a choice. And now, with, you know, if they want to go out and court any free agents here, they can say, "Hey, look, we're bringing these guys in. Come be a part of the new Cleveland Browns."
What they can say is, "Hey, we got a starting spot open for you because we traded for a bunch of backups. So we'd love to pay you starting money. Come on in."
I do. Do you think anything about Demarius Randall? They're going to move him to safety, which was his it was his college position. So, does that do anything for you? Does that excite you in any way, Andy?
Yes. I mean, exciting relatively. I mean, if we're talking nickel package now rather than franchise and resurrection stage, if we narrow it down to nickel package, sure, I get a little bit excited because what Demarius Randall can do is give you some man coverage ability out of the safety position. And we've seen how valuable that can be for teams that like to play nickel and dime defense. Think about what the Eagles did last year with Corey Graham, their dime back off the bench, for example. He was huge for them defensively. He opens the scheme. So, yes, you get that with Randall. And I'm not saying this stuff's not important, but the headlines on Friday were Browns are back. Browns look like a playoff contender. What the hell are you talking about? They look like a team that got better in their nickel package. Maybe. Let's keep in mind, Randall's also very up and down. It's entirely possible that he's going to bomb at the safety spot. He's a risk and a gamble.
I just want to say this about Tyrod Taylor, because I'm so tired of the Tyrod Taylor conversation, because it is obnoxious the way it's either you think he's you know, one tier below Brady and Rodgers, or you think he is the 90th best quarterback in the NFL right now. He lives somewhere in that 25 to 40 range of the fringe starters, of the plug him in there, he doesn't turn the ball over, you get a slight boost with your run game because you have to worry about him on the backside. He's just not going to, you know, he's like, the thing that's frustrating to me about the Tyrod Taylor situation is I thought the playoff loss perfectly encapsulated the issue with relying on him as any sort of, you know, franchise quarterback. The fact that he can't make plays, he'll leave potentially playoff game winning throws on the field, and you can't have that. You just can't win with that. That said, he's not going to hit the sorts of lows that they hit with DeShone Kizer last year. And it, you know, like we talked about on the show, it was unfair what Kizer was expected to do, what he was asked to do last season. But Tyrod's at least not going to turn the ball over and will give them some semblance of being able to win games 20-17, I guess.
Yeah, no, I hear you. And he's also going to help your running game. He gives you dimension there with the read option and just the idea that you have to account for the QB. And then when you add in Landry and what he can do on misdirection and screens and reverses, all those short area extensions of your running game, that's a whole different rushing attack. And I would hope and imagine that Hugh Jackson will take advantage of that. My problem with it overall is the biggest issue in Cleveland last year was they lined up in these balanced 2x2 spread formations and ran a bunch of isolation routes. There was nothing complex or creative about their passing game. And I didn't love the job Hugh Jackson did, and I think his hands were at times tied by the limitations of his young wide receivers. Guys just don't know what they're doing there. So when you bring in Taylor, though, you're not changing that because he has to play in an offense like that because he has no anticipation to his passing. So route combinations and designer plays really don't work with him because for those to be executed, you have to anticipate and throw the ball on time. Taylor has to see guys get open and then throw, which lends itself more to the isolation routes and the same issues the Browns had a year ago. Taylor and Landry are two opposite players in terms of what type of passing game they fit, which is why another reason I think this is really a move for a backup QB, because Taylor's not going to be able to take advantage of all the dimension Landry brings.
No, I agree with you, and I don't think it's going to be long. I think they're taking a quarterback at one. I think they're crazy not to take a quarterback at one if they really want to wait and take one at four. I think that's stupid, but they'll still get one at four, and that will be their guy very soon. But the last point I'm going to make on Tyrod Taylor, maybe until next fall, I think a lot of Browns fans.
Go ahead.
No, I think a lot of Browns fans were incredibly nervous that they were going to give A.J. McCarron a very big deal and then say, okay, well, we'll just wait until round two or round three and use one of those picks to get one of the, you know, one of the developmental quarterbacks, and A.J. will be our guy. So I think this is sort of a sigh of relief type of excitement as well for the Browns. And not to knock A.J. McCarron, I we're not here to bash him, but he would not be a guy you would get excited about if that trade had gone through last year when they tried to give up, I believe it was a 2 and a 3 to get him from Cincinnati, which is crazy. And it's kind of crazy that they gave up the first pick of the third round to get Tyrod. That's a huge overpay. Again, your market is determined in how many teams are interested in you. There were reports that Denver and Arizona were both in on Tyrod Taylor. So maybe you had to go that high, but I find it unlikely that anyone was going to go that high. That's a high pick for a guy who's probably only going to be your starter for a couple of months next year.
Well, I mean, maybe. I think teams have come to value the backup, especially with what's happened in Philadelphia this last year.
Yep.
And a team that has a ton of draft picks already, they might say, we'll go early third round to ensure. Because what Taylor, he is for sure a stable backup for the simple reason that he doesn't turn the ball over. I'm not saying Tyrod Taylor is a horrendous QB who doesn't deserve to be in the NFL. The only issue I have with the whole thing is that there are some people who have suggested the Browns are back, baby, or they're here, I guess, because they haven't really been back in so long. And that's just not the case. The Browns it's not the case. But I think we're in agreement on what Taylor is. And yes, a nice attribute that he's not A.J. McCarron at overpriced tag. That's very good. You like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's the extent of it to me. I
put it in the pro side of the column in the little...
Well, and you know, Gary, what's nice for Taylor is you remember on our MMQB trip a few summers ago, Taylor, according to Peter King, was it Peter King or Russ Brandon who said this? But pound for pound, Buffalo's the best restaurant city in America, but another blue collar town like Cleveland's right up there with Buffalo. So he gets to stay in a great town for culture and sophistication, according to our Peter King, who loves these Rust Belt Midwestern towns.
I am in lockstep with Peter on that. I love Buffalo. I legitimately love Buffalo, and I think I've only been to Cleveland once in my life, but I'm sure I would love it if I spent more time there. My sister
was there for
Cleveland.
A day.
She seems to like her.
Yeah, I did a Joe Thomas thing there a few years ago, and I loved the downtown.
There you go. Good stuff happening.
That's a lot
in Cleveland.
Of Cleveland talk. How long are we into this now? This really is like 8 minutes on Tyrod Taylor and the Browns.
It was. Well, let's go on to Tyrod's old team, the Buffalo Bills, and I am getting giddy about the Buffalo Bills right now. They again, Brandon Bean came in last year, and Sean McDermott, he came in a little bit before Brandon Bean, but everything they did last year had sort of a long-term outlook to it, and then they sort of accidentally made the playoffs, and that sort of threw some of the expectations out of whack. And again, I think this is a 6-10 or 7-9 team next year, but the whole point was you don't want to compete to be a one-and-done playoff team. You want to be in a position to compete for championships, especially since Tom Brady will presumably at some point stop playing football. So the Bills are now in position to get their quarterback. They can. They did the following thing. They dealt Tyrod Taylor, picked up the 65th pick. They traded Cordy Glenn, another guy they really didn't want. They sent him to the Bengals, and as part of that package, they moved up from 21 to 12. So now they have, I believe it's 5 picks now in the top 65, starting with that 12 pick. So they have the ammo. Brandon Bean just has to be texting Chris Ballard nonstop, Snapchatting him, MySpacing him, whatever you
Ooh,
do
MySpacing.
Now.
MySpacing. Well, that would be more like Marty Herney and Ted Thompson or someone doing business on the MySpace one. But I know I like what they're doing. There's some mass movement feel to this. They're shaping their foundation and their identity in Buffalo. Remember, they drafted Deion Dawkins at left tackle in the second round last year, and he was slowly supplanting Glenn at left tackle anyway. Dawkins showed up on film, or at times he didn't, which is a good thing with left tackle. That was always Cordy Glenn's deal, is you'd forget he's out there. Even his old line coaches would tell us, you forget he's out there, which is not the worst thing with the left tackle. Mm-hmm. So they didn't lose much at that position position overall, and they gained a lot by trading him. And then the guys you mentioned, and then they've signed some guys. They brought back Kyle Williams, and they're putting Star Lotulelei next to him at defensive tackle. That helps. They needed some help along in there. What else? Didn't they make a trade at cornerback there? They got Vontae Davis a few weeks ago. They're getting subtly better in a lot of ways while getting draft picks.
They made their splash with a Star Lotulelei, and also Kyle Williams is coming back on a one-year deal. So all of a sudden, what was a relative weakness becomes, I don't want to say it's a great unstoppable line now, but you put Lotulelei and Kyle Williams in the middle of that line, that's a pretty good start right there for what they have. And then obviously they did the old, they scooped up a couple of the veterans who got let go early, so it doesn't factor in the compensatory pick thing. And they got Vontae Davis. They got Chris Ivory. They got players there. I mean, they are in good shape. Like I said, I think they slide back because I think there were a lot of breaks that went their way last year during that playoff run. But this is a team that is sort of positioning itself to be good and potentially very good for quite a while in the post-Tom Brady AFC East.
Yeah, and it feels like they're making a move for a quarterback, too. It just feels like there's a reason they're doing all this.
They have to be. Like I said, there's seven or eight teams in the top half of that first round, and there's four quarterbacks. There's a consensus four. Again, if you want to put Lamar Jackson in there, that's fine, but I don't think he's in the same class as those other four. I don't know who they're targeting, but they have more than enough ammo to come up to three. Like I said, if the Giants want to skip the quarterbacks and build up that offensive line, they can get that two pick. Maybe they go up and get that four pick from the Browns.
Yeah,
they can do some things now because they're trying to come up. The Dolphins are going to try and come up. There's going to be competition there, and they have as much ammo as anyone to go and do it. Andy,
and
before we move on.
Here's the neat thing about these QBs.
We won't move on yet. Go ahead, Andy.
Well, all these teams that are going to be getting these QBs, including Buffalo, all four or five of them are going to get the QB they wanted all along, according to what they say after the draft happens.
That's how it always goes. They're
the highest guy on our board all along, actually. I couldn't believe he was available. Every QB is going to be a dream come true for these teams, according to what they tell us.
I'll say this. Reading the tea leaves, I think the Dolphins love Baker Mayfield. And we've done a lot of Baker Mayfield coverage here at the MMQB, and I've been a part of a lot of it.
You want to place a bet, a huge bet?
Yeah.
I don't know much about Mayfield, but I know the type. I know the general idea of what he is as a QB. I'd be surprised, knowing Adam Gase the way I do, I don't think he'd be huge on that.
I'll give you an out on a bet. I think you owe me 4 years' salary at this point. I'll give you an out on that bet if you think differently about Mayfield after you watch him. I think he's a little bit different I think there's a stereotype of him.
Because he's short and runs around. So he's not Russell Wilson, Johnny Manziel style of play. Is that what you're saying? That's what I'm generalizing.
He's a big-time anticipatory passer. He's a guy who consistently found throwing lanes at Oklahoma. And he is. He's an extend-the-play guy, but he's not a tuck-it-and-run guy. He's an extend-the-play with your eyes up and do that sort of thing, as opposed to tuck-it-and-run and pick up 80 yards rushing every week.
Okay. Well, I'll go into it open-minded, certainly. Yeah, no, I'm glad to hear that.
He is, everything we've heard, as Robert Klemko has been reporting, this is he is sort of a football nerd, football savant type of guy. Even though everyone wants to lump him in with Johnny Manziel, which Johnny Manziel was a complete opposite. Johnny Manziel was a guy who wanted to not work and then show up on Sunday. Mayfield, as brash as he is, and even though that one time he touched his wiener and the cameras caught it in the Kansas game, he is a guy who his football character, I believe the terminology would be, his football character is very high. So I think he's a guy who coaches would really like, and I think the Dolphins are sort of maybe in like with him at the moment. I think they're sending him mash notes and trying to make that happen.
We'll see. The reason I said that about Gase is He believes in the quick game and playing on time, which means pocket passing, because you can't play on time outside the pocket. It's a very different timing anyway. So I just stylistically, I see Gase as someone who likes those bigger, traditional drop-back mm-hmm. passers. But Gase has had a number of types of QBs, and he had everything from Tim Tebow to Peyton Manning during his time in Denver as the QB coach or offensive coordinator. So we'll see. He's a creative coach, and maybe he has something in mind, or maybe it's smokescreen. I don't know. But we're betting another 4 years' salary on it, I guess, because you said I owe you four now somehow.
You owe me
I don't know if that's
four. There. Yeah, you owe me four. We'll bet two on this. But like I said, I'll give you the out. I know you haven't seen Mayfield yet, so I'll give you the out. Okay. If you want to change your mind later this offseason. I won't guilt you into it. A free out too.
Well, yeah. What else? What kind of out would it be?
Like, I don't know.
How else would I get out of the bet? Would I?
Yeah, no. Yeah, you have to buy out. You'd have to buy out with like a half a year's salary or something like that. That's how it would go down. We've got plenty more left, including some stuff on the Miami Dolphins making some moves. But first, I wanted to get back to Mattress Firm. Let's keep the ball rolling, shall we? Everyone knows how important stretching is before an event, so does Mattress Firm. Except it's your dollar. Your budget stretches further when you're shopping at America's Neighborhood Mattress Store. It's a home run, and you'll have a ball. They're the head coaches when it comes to mattress expertise. But know this, they are more than mattress experts. They have a game plan that helps you transform your mattress into a bed, from adjustable bases to sheets to headboards. And bedroom decor. They have you literally and figuratively covered up like your favorite cornerback. Go to mattressfirm.com/podcast to see what deals are happening as I read this sentence to you. They even offer you a 120-night sleep trial to ensure perfection and a 120-night low-price guarantee so you know you pay the perfect price. Talk about a 1-2 punch, a knockout, if you will. Score big with a perfect bed. Head to mattressfirm.com/podcast to get the play-by-play on how you can monumentally improve your sleep today, tonight, and tomorrow. All right, Andy, lots more to get to, and we'll probably have to pick up the pace just a bit. Sammy Watkins heading to the Chiefs. So the Chiefs all these years, you know, we used to say, oh, Andy Reid's system will do it. They don't need the superstar receivers. That was, well, they kind of said that. We didn't really say that on their behalf. But you now got Travis Kelce, Tyreek Hill, Sammy Watkins as weaponry for Patrick Mahomes. And one of the reasons they can do this is because it's Patrick Mahomes now. He's on that rookie deal, so they're not paying an exorbitant amount to their quarterback.
Well, and it's a different – he's a totally different quarterback stylistically than Alex Smith. Yeah, well, and Adam Smith, too, probably wouldn't have been very good, whoever he is. Alex Smith, with Alex Smith, yes, the system needs to win and do it because he's a cautious kind of player. Mahomes is an old-school gunslinger from everything I've heard. And I've had Chiefs coaches, we watch film, and I say, well, do you want your QB to make this throw? How about this throw? Is he leaving throws on the field here? And the answer a lot of times comes back, well, you know, the next one's not going to. Our guy now will, whether we want him to or not, he's making that deep dig throw. He's pushing the ball downfield into tight windows. So to have a guy like Watkins who has some speed, build-up speed, he's a little quicker than he appears to. I thought he looked better on film than his numbers suggested in L.A. To insert him into the equation with Kelce and Hill, that makes perfect sense because you do need dynamic receivers now with Mahomes at QB.
Chiefs made another big move here. Andrew Hitchens, the linebacker. Anthony Hitchens.
Yeah.
I was like, why did I write Andrew?
Names.
Anthony
it's the
Hitchens.
A names. Yeah, you called me Aaron earlier, I think, in fact. These A names are really throwing us off. Yeah, Hitchens, he's Derek Johnson now. He's going to fill that role for him.
Yeah.
And that's probably a step down from, at least if we're comparing Johnson of 2 or 3 years ago, mm-hmm. and it's a little bit of a step up if we're talking about Johnson from last year. I don't think there's a whole lot of change, though. Those inside linebackers, there's some interchangeability there within the context of Kansas City scheme. They don't put a ton of pressure on the inside backers. Derek Johnson did some special things when he was at his best. Hitchens will be fine, and he's a three-down player, so that's important.
Yeah, and we don't have the details yet, but they reportedly they are giving him a lot. They're giving him like something like $9 million a year. He's going to be one of the highest paid inside linebackers. And again, this is a function of when you hit the market because the salary cap keeps growing. But they made a pretty hefty investment into Hitchens here.
If that's true, then you pump the brakes a little bit on the analysis because – remember, he didn't play in all the packages in Dallas last year. He got taken off the field at times. They loved him, but you know Sean Lee wasn't getting taken off the field. So if they're paying him $9 million a year or even in that ballpark, that changes my opinion on it a little bit. But he is what he is as a player, and he's a decent enough NFL starter.
And earlier in the offseason, they had added David Amerson as a he was cut by the Raiders, and the Chiefs scoop him up. But that's obviously noteworthy because they dealt Marcus Peters out to L.A. The Rams also add Aqib Talib in a trade with the Broncos. So the Rams, they're going to let Trumaine Johnson walk again. We're not at a point where we know where Trumaine Johnson is going to sign next. But the Rams have brought in basically two kind of – I don't know, mercenary-type cornerbacks to fill out their secondary here in Peters and Talib, and certainly two guys who have played at incredibly high levels over the years. And it seems like, you know, if there's one position where you're going to sort of churn in new guys, it seems like cornerback is sort of a place where that makes sense.
What they have now are the 1 and 1A for off-coverage aggressive corners. I mean, these guys are high-risk, high-reward, and it works usually if you have one of them, especially if he's opposite a really solid corner. So Talib opposite Chris Harris in Denver. If you've got two of these guys that are going to play off-coverage, read the route, read the receiver, read the QB all at once, kind of read the triangle, as Ron Jaworski likes to call it, and then make, we'll call it, educated guesses on the ball from there, you're going to give up some huge plays. You're going to make some huge plays. And that's what Talib did, and that's what Peters did. They've been doing that for their entire careers. Here's what's really interesting to me, Gary. These kind of corners can work if you have a dominant pass rush, because your pass rush is forcing the ball out on the defense's schedule, and that makes it easier for these corners to jump and guess and play the ball. If you don't have a dominant pass rush, they're not going to work. So two things come to mind. One is Aaron Donald has enormous leverage whenever it gets time to actually get his long-term deal done, because these guys don't work if Aaron Donald's not on the team. And then two is they need to find an edge rusher somehow, probably two or three, at least two. Robert Quinn washed up last year, and he's not going to be on the team this year now. They don't have a lot of other, not true edge bending guys. They have a decent rotation of defensive linemen, but they don't have any edge benders. They need to draft at least one of them. I mean, they have to have somebody, because Aaron Donald's great, but he's not enough just in and of himself. So this team has some work to do with their personnel up front.
Yeah, it's tough. And there's really, there just aren't edge benders available. I mean,
in this year's draft?
Yeah, in this year's draft, I mean, you have Bradley Chubb. They're not going to get Bradley Chubb. He's probably going to go top five, well, maybe top five, easily top 10. The rest of the guys are sort of, you know, developmental, maybe you're going to play them on third downs early in their career type of guys. But there's talent, there's raw talent to be worked with, but there's no plug-and-play guys. And as we see, you know, they don't make it out to the free agent market anymore. So I don't know how they're going to do that work. They might just be relying on coverage this year.
Yeah, and then I guess the other part of can we get to the Ogletree trade then here as well?
Yeah, let's put it here then. Yeah, Ogletree trade. The Rams send Alec Ogletree out to the Giants. So he didn't have a very good year in Wade Phillips' system, and I guess they had just made a huge commitment to him the previous offseason, and I guess they. Obviously, they had second thoughts about it.
Yeah, they did. This one surprised me. I did not expect this one to come across the ticker at all. I didn't think Ogletree was bad on film, and they have Mark Barron and Ogletree together. That was a lot of speed and coverage versatility at the linebacker position. you lose that. Now, you still have it with Barron, but when you have only one guy like that versus two, that's a lot of dimensions that get removed from what you can do coverage-wise. And the Rams, they really use those dimensions because they're one team that will – they'll have their linebackers essentially play cornerback at times because they like to disguise in man coverage and then play zone. More teams are starting to do that. The Rams will do it out of two deep safety looks, and Ogletree and Barron and their flexibility, it's a big reason they were able to do it because those guys have – they don't have corner skills, but they have quasi-defensive back skills. So I was really surprised by this move, and especially because they paid them not long ago. Maybe – I don't know if something happened or what – I'd love to find out what changed with Ogletree and the mind of the Rams, and maybe it just got into finances, but – they should have been able to see the finances when they originally signed him a few months ago.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, look, they're building up to go for it in L.A. here. And again, it's another one of those deals. That, you know, in a couple of years, they'll have to pay Jared Goff, and then your flexibility is really out the window. So they probably feel like they have a year or two right now to make a run at it. Ogletree to the Giants. Well, the Giants never invest in linebackers, so that's weird.
Well, it's a different system now. They've got James Betcher there, and remember who James Betcher had. He's a defensive coordinator. His first year at the Giants, came over from the Cardinals. Remember who he had in Arizona. He had Dayon Buchanan, a really good runner, a guy who just stalker. He covers a lot of ground. And they had Carlos Dansby, a smart player who could give him a lot of disguise dimension. They do many things with their fronts and their pressure concepts. You can't be devoid of linebackers and run James Betcher's scheme, and he knows that. I mean, I've had this conversation with him many times over the years, and including recently is, we got to get some linebackers in New York, and they went out and got one. So I understand it from New York's side. I don't quite understand it from the Rams' side, but I'm sure they have their reasons, and it's going to be financial, and that gets a little more complex.
And just sticking to the Giants for a moment, they you know, Dave Gettleman went in this offseason saying he was going to fix the offensive line. They lost Weston Richburg. They were connected really heavily to Andrew Norwell and ended up not getting him. So we'll see. There are obviously some more guys out there. Nate Solder at the moment is still out there, but Giants still that number one priority that still has not been crossed off their list at this point. Let's talk about Norwell real quick. He goes to the Jaguars. Yeah, I mean, it looks like they are going to be, you know, as heavily invested in the run and Leonard Fournette as they were a year ago, and Norwell helps you there. It's a B minus line. That's probably a B line now.
Yeah, I would agree with that. It really, that was what was so interesting last year. They're a smash mouth running team that really did not have a lot of road graders along their offensive line. Everybody thought they did because the guys are big and Leonard Fournette's ramming it in there for 3 or 4 yards. So yeah, attitude football. But they really weren't that kind of offensive line. They needed to get better in that regard. Norwell gets them better. I think they overspent for him, but we knew someone was going to, and at least you're a contender overspend. It's one thing to be a team trying to rebuild and you overspend because that hinders your other efforts. But if you just got your quarterback signed, your running back's on his rookie deal, and he's the backbone of your offense, and you've decided we're comfortable letting some of our receivers go, although they did retain Marquise Lee at wideout, I understand it. I think it makes sense for Jacksonville, and I applaud the move. And the other thing Norwell gives you, he's a very good pull blocker. So maybe we see a little less zone and inside zone and a little more gap scheme or power and counter this year with Jacksonville. I don't know how that would do with Fournette. I imagine he'd be very good at it. I like the move. This is a good spot for Norwell and a good move for the Jags.
Yeah, they do. They lose Allen Robinson. They retain Marquise Lee. And during our taping, they just signed Dante Moncrief. So they get sort of the big, fastish perimeter guy to fill in for Allen Robinson. And depending on what you thought of Robinson's play before he tore his ACL, it might not be much of a downgrade. Will you allow that, Andy? Can I say that?
Well, let's just I'm not a big Moncrief guy, so I don't know if I'd let you say that. But
see, I'm a big Moncrief guy, and we'll never get along because of that.
No, I know. It's terrible. We had dinner with Ryan Griggs at the Combine, by the way. Did someone tell you that?
No.
The guy who drafted Moncrief. You didn't know? Yeah, the whole MMQB staff. Maybe I'm not supposed to be saying that. I don't know. We had dinner with
Ryan Griggs. Nobody mentioned that.
I'm surprised because all of us were there. All of us. Peter and Jenny and Connor and Robert and myself.
Yep.
And Albert Breer. And it was Ryan Grigson and his wife, and Grigson's an immaculate storyteller. But I remember, I just remember that because when we went to the Colts training camp the first time on the MMQB tour, Dan Green, who does college basketball at SI, but he was with us on the tour, and I liked him a lot. He asked Grigson, who's the guy that's impressing you most in camp? And I guess I can share this now because everyone's moved on. Grigson said, off the record, Dante Moncrief. And Grigson loved him. I always remembered him saying off the record because I bet that was just like a little tool he used to ingratiate himself with the press. Because yes. Why would he – I mean, what's the big deal if that's on the record? You know, hey, newsflash, Ryan Grigson likes his high draft pick at wide receiver. But anyway, the full – Dante Moncrief never became the guy Grigson hoped he would, and that's why he's not with the Colts. I don't think he'll be more than a number three for Jacksonville. Alan Hearns is the guy there. And then who I really like is Dede Westbrook, who's kind of similar to Marquise Lee in style. But remember, their offense was good, at least adequate for what they do in the passing game last year when it was Westbrook and Lee in the lineup late in the season in the playoffs.
Yeah. And Keenan Cole kind of emerged late for them. So they have,
you're right.
They have weapons. Moncrief is at least a big body with the rest of those little guys, so...
He doesn't play that way, though. He doesn't. I mean, he doesn't make physical catches.
You can. Yeah, you had to knock him one more time before we move on. I knew it.
Yes,
I knew it.
Yes.
So Allen Robinson goes to the Bears. The Bears signed three pass catchers today after having basically zero pass catchers last season for Mitchell Trubisky. So Allen Robinson, Trey Burton, show favorite Trey Burton. I'll brand a bat and Taylor Gabriel.
All good moves. I like the first two for this reason. Let's look at what Mitchell Trubisky is. He's a timing and rhythm passer. That's what his career is going to be built on. And Bears coaches know this. They'll tell you this in an honest moment. He has a chance to be a better version of Kirk Cousins. You can work with that. You got to build the right kind of guys around him. So what we're talking about is a good play-action game and a good throwing game out of your running concepts, kind of like how Cousins has succeeded in Washington. Well, Allen Robinson, when he was healthy a few years ago, and we don't know if he's this now or not, but I understand why the Bears, especially after how they got bit at this position last year, I understand why they would make the gamble. When he was healthy, he was as good of a play-action receiver downfield as anyone in the league. He was excellent on vertical play-action concepts. And then Burton, with his flexibility, he gives you a lot of dimension out of your two tight end packages, which means you can throw the ball from two tight end sets, and that helps your first and second down passing game. So both of these moves, and Gabriel, he, you know, injecting speed off the bench, I'm fine with that. Both of these moves, of these top two, Burton and Robinson, I think they really fit what you want to do with Trubisky.
Yeah. Yeah, and to Gabriel, I mean, look, they had no one, and now they have people. I mean, they have people who can run and catch, and that's good for Mitchell Trubisky, because it really was, the bar was low there as far as receiving core went. As the AFC South turns, Aaron Colvin to the Texans. So the Texans, you know, they had some issues on the back end last year. They nab one of the best, let's say one of the top five, even though I haven't created a list to really go off of, one of the top five slot corners in the NFL goes to the Texans. And Texans also get to poach him from a division rival. So a little bonus there, too.
I want to – do we know the numbers on this one yet? It looks like it's I don't think we do at the time of this recording.
I saw 4 years.
Yeah.
But I didn't see it. Yeah, I didn't see a dollar figure.
We had a great discussion at the Combine, Greg Cosell and I at over a dinner with a few people about who's going to make more money in free agency, Aaron Colvin or Bashaud Breeland of the Redskins. And what we're really talking about is how much do you value a superb slot nickel corner versus an up and down, every down outside corner, which is what Breeland was. And Breeland, I don't believe, is signed anywhere, correct, Gary?
He just did, actually. He just signed with Carolina.
Oh, like seconds ago?
Minutes ago.
All right, minutes ago. Well, so, all right.
He just texted me as we went.
Oh, good. I'm glad. Well, you got to break the news. I'm eager to see who got what amount of money. I think Colvin, though, my guess, if I have to guess, which I do at this point, I bet Houston is seeing him as a starting corner and someone who can play outside and then move to the slot and nickel, really similar to what they've done with Kareem Jackson at times, who has not been a bad slot corner for him, but has not been great either. I think they wanted some more playmaking at this spot, and Colvin can give them that.
Let's stick with Breland as long as we started on him. Breland to Carolina. The Panthers had obviously they had dealt Darryl Worley. I was wondering when they dealt Worley, is this some sort of sign that Eric Washington is going to put the emphasis back on sort of the four-man rush and drop seven, kind of what they did under Sean McDermott more than what they did under Wilkes last season with a blitz-heavy approach. Because they also lost Kurt Coleman, so they're getting a little bit thin in the secondary. Maybe that's what they go back to. But, Breland basically replaces Worley at this point.
I saw Eric Washington late at night in the convention center in Indianapolis at the Combine. And the convention center has these long hallways, like two blocks long of hallways. So you see these guys come at great distance, just him and me. And I cornered him, and I said, I want to know, who are you going to be? Are you going to be Sean McDermott or Steve Wilkes? And what I was really asking, he took the question, you know, he said, I'm going to be Eric Washington. It made me feel bad. what I'm really asking is, are you going to blitz or not? You know, of course you're Eric Washington, and he earned the job. He was their D-line coach. He did a tremendous job the last few years. My guess, and I don't, you know, he didn't really tell me, he didn't evade it, but he, you know, he's still figuring it out. My guess is he's going to be more of a four-man rush guy, and they do want to keep seven bodies back in coverage. Those fire zones they did under Wilkes last year, those got worse as the season went along. Teams figured out Carolina's defense, which was frankly part of the reason I was surprised Wilkes got the head coaching job in Arizona, because James Betcher's defense got better as the season went along, and they were a blitz defense as well. Wilkes has got worse, but you know Wilkes got the job, and we'll see how that goes. I would think that Carolina's going to go back to regular coverage, which means they're not overly reliant on cornerbacks like maybe they were a year ago.
Yep. And obviously, in the Worley trade, they get Torrey Smith, and I continue to say Torrey Smith can run fast, and that's an attribute that's important if you want to throw the ball downfield. So they presumably want to do that with Cam Newton and with Norv Turner as the offensive coordinator. So good for Torrey
Smith. Well, they never replaced Ted Ginn last year, and Ted Ginn's another guy who runs really fast, and you don't know if he's going to catch the ball or not. And to his credit, he's actually become a pretty complete receiver and a much better catcher of the ball than he was early in his career. But that's what Torrey Smith is, and they missed that dimension from their offense a little bit a year ago. Torrey Smith's unreliable once the ball is in the air, but at least he gives you a reason to put the ball in the air.
Yeah. Kurt Coleman, as I mentioned, done with the Panthers. He goes to the Saints, stays in the division. And the Saints get a sort of lot more stability out of that other safety spot as opposed to the old Kenny Vaccaro days.
Yeah, Gary, I would have said that even 3 months ago, even maybe call it 4 or 5 months ago. I think one issue with Coleman, I've always liked how Coleman disguises his coverages. I think one issue, though, is they felt he got a little bit untamed in that regard in Carolina. And I did not hear this from Eric Washington, by the way. This is just and hearing this around the league and talking to various NFC South coaches, is that he wasn't quite what you wanted at safety because the discipline wasn't there. And at times, some of the disguising could actually tip his coverages. So just something to keep in mind. I hadn't thought of him from that perspective. It's kind of a hard one to know if you're not in on the play calls and looking at it from the quarterback's perspective. You know, if you're watching the whole league, you see a guy who moves around a lot before the snap, and sometimes it works out, and you tend to remember that, and you think Kurt Coleman's a great poor man's Eric Weddle. But there are people who would disagree within the NFL. Obviously, the Saints aren't among them. And it'll be interesting to see where Coleman plays with Marcus Williams, because they're both probably better as free safeties than strong safeties. But I would think Coleman would go down in the box a little bit. They also have Von Bell. They'll play with three safeties again like they did under when Vaccaro was there last year.
Jimmy Graham goes to the Packers. Jordy Nelson out in Green Bay. So the Packers sort of, they had, two seasons ago it was Jared Cook. Last season it was Martellus Bennett until he went down, although with no Aaron Rodgers, it didn't really matter anyway. But Jimmy Graham, the new tight end in Green Bay.
And I'm guessing that one also broke when we went on, because that was not near the top of our rundown when we emailed back and forth, and that probably should be. That's a pretty big signing.
It is. That it is. And yes, it did just come through probably about 15 minutes ago. I got the emergency alert on my phone.
And we know Nelson is out for sure?
Yeah, Nelson's been cut.
So Jordy Nelson out, Graham in. Did the Packers get better in their passing game? I'm sure that helped their salary cap or their finances. I bet Graham's not going to cost $10 million a year like Nelson did. Maybe he does. I'd be surprised.
I mean,
I don't know if they're better. I don't know if they got better.
They invested in Davante Adams obviously for the long term, and I mean they still have Randall Cobb there. That was really when they signed Adams to that big deal, it had to be either Nelson and Cobb were going or we're going to have to restructure big time. And yeah, that's it looks like Nelson is out, and it's tough to argue. Again, it's so hard to figure it out since Rodgers was out last season. But if you were looking at all those guys last year, Nelson playing with Brett Hundley as his quarterback, and you said, you know, who's the weakest link here, you'd say Jordy Nelson. I mean, he had a really bad year.
He did, but he was part of it is he's so good on contested catches, and Rodgers and he had such chemistry
yes.
on that. So when you took that out, Nelson's game fundamentally changes. And there were times also where he was open within the design and Hundley didn't get him the ball. And that was the case with – that's why DeShone Kizer's now the backup in Green Bay and not Hundley. So it's interesting because I just thought the chemistry with Rodgers and Nelson's the X factor here.
Yeah.
And would Rodgers rather have Nelson than Cobb? And do they even ask him? I don't know if they do or not. Jimmy Graham, though, he'll make some contested catches as well. I mean, he can catch those back shoulders. He's bigger than Nelson. You line them up, you create some mismatches, you get some coverage indicators by moving your tight end around. I understand the merits of it. I get it, so I guess it's fine. I don't know if Nelson was – I don't think Nelson will be great on his next team, but with Aaron Rodgers, I don't know if he was washed up. I think they had such a special thing there.
Yeah. Yeah, and I actually will be curious to know if Aaron Rodgers did know about that because he was pretty upset earlier in the offseason when they moved on from Alex Van Pelt, the quarterback's coach there. So, yeah, a little bit of drama in Green Bay here. But let's go. I don't have a really good transition for the guys left. So let's just say Paul Richardson signed with Washington. So that's now you got Doxson, Richardson on the outside, Crowder in the slot, and Jordan Reed between injuries as your tight end. And that's Alex Smith's group there.
And Alex Smith, if he's going to play with Paul Richardson, he has to be willing to pull the trigger downfield on outside throws because Richardson's very good at running vertically and then tracking the ball. And we haven't seen Alex Smith do that much over the years. I hope he does. He's going to have to with Richardson. And Richardson, on his part, he got better in his route tree towards the end in Seattle. He must continue that progress because Washington, they're very big on post patterns and dig routes. And Richardson, he might be the guy lifting the safety, and Doxson sets up those runs, those dig routes and those post patterns. But overall, to play in that system, to play in any system, you've got to keep getting better in your route tree. So that's Richardson's job, and then Smith's job is to pull the trigger when Richardson's one-on-one downfield.
Lions get two linebackers here, Christian Jones and Devon Kennard. So, yeah, putting a group together here for Matt Patricia there.
Christian Jones is a downgrade from Tahir Whitehead, but he's probably going to be cheaper than what Whitehead would have cost. Mm-hmm. He can play on passing downs. That helps. And then Kennard, coaches who have had him love his ability to set the edge against tight ends. He's not a defensive end, so he's not always doing it against offensive tackles, but as a strong side linebacker who walks down over the tight end, he gives you a lot of comfort. And I know there were times the Giants, he was the reason they played certain defensive fronts for many snaps in every game. So he can be a difference maker in that very specific way. And he got starter money. He got $18 million over a few years, if I recall.
Yep.
So I would think they see him as a version of Rob Ninkovich in that scheme under Matt Patricia.
And Chris Baker to the Bengals. Does that do anything for you?
Nah, not really. No.
Well, let's end it. We had one more late breaker here, and it's a quarterback. And it's a quarterback that I think we're both higher on than most, Josh McCown, going back to the Jets. 1 year, $10 million deal. And according to Calvin Watkins of Newsday, McCown has been told he will be the starter next season. And they are still being linked to Teddy Bridgewater, but McCown is back to start in 2018 for the Jets.
I like McCown a lot more than Bridgewater. We talked about McCown a few shows ago. I thought he had a really, really nice season last year. I'm glad they brought him back, and his QB coach from a year ago, Jeremy Bates, is now running the offense as the coordinator.
Yeah, so I think that's kind of a positive development for the Jets. And obviously, they, you know, that's not going to preclude them from drafting a guy if they want to draft a guy. So there you go.
How many guys has McCown been the bridge QB for? He's probably going on his 10th year as a veteran bridge QB.
So many teams. And the only team that ever really invested in him as maybe a longish term starter was the Bucks, and then they went 2-14 or whatever and drafted Jameis Winston.
That was the year you put the money on them. I remember
that
after
was
I
on your advice.
Odds or something like that after I win the NFC South.
After I hired you as my financial advisor, you said mortgage the house on the Bucks.
On the Bucks, the Super Bowl. Yeah.
No, they were 100-1. You and Peter had both said they were winning the AFC, or excuse me, the NFC South, and they were just as close to winning the AFC South as they were in the NFC South, actually. But Gagne and I, Matt Gagne, who was one of the other senior editors at the time, who has since moved on. But we had seen on the odds like Bucks are 100-1. Bucks are the biggest long shot in the NFL. Like, how is that possible? So we each put I think it was $100 on the Bucks, and we were gonna put our kids through college with it, and then they went 2-14.
Yeah, well, welcome to gambling.
Well, the point was,
you had a problem before that or something. Maybe this is a continued behavior.
If they made the playoffs, then you can start hedging against them in each round, and then you would make money no matter what. You wouldn't make the whatever $10,000, but you'd make significant money.
That was not your first bet. That's true. I would have never thought of that. I would have thought a bet's a bet, and you hope it works out. But that's a gambler's mindset right there.
No, when it's free money like that, you got to take it.
Free money. That's a gambler's term, too, free money.
It is. Sometimes there's free money out there. Like the
I'd
Bucks
love to see the, actual free money someday. I hear about it all the time. I've never come across it.
I'll tell you. Just follow my advice. Pick the 2-14 to win the Super Bowl. Well, that's a wrap for the show, Andy. Now that you've shamed me and my financial choices. Like I said, we are going to have probably Free Agency Part 2 next show, but we're, I don't know, maybe it's a hybrid show with a mailbag. So send the questions in. If we don't do the hybrid mailbag show, we will do a full mailbag as soon as we can, which would probably be a week from Monday. But we will be back in your feed with the normal Monday show coming up. As for now, thank you as always to producers Shelby Royston and Lou Pellegrino, as well as editor Chris Basil, all the guys at Cadence 13 who make us sound so good. Most of all, thank you to you guys for listening to this episode of the MMQB 10 Things podcast. You really are the best, and send those questions, talkback@themmqb.com or on the Twitter @Andy_Benoit, @JukeRambling_SI or on Facebook. Our faces are on there. We love hearing from you. Send the questions for the mailbag show so we can have a show. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of the MMQB podcast with Albert Breer, the MMQB podcast with Peter King, and this podcast, the MMQB 10 Things podcast, wherever you listen to podcasts, including the MMQB.com, SI.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, and other podcast providers. We will see you guys on Monday morning. As regulation has officially expired on our podcast and there's no overtime in sight, I'll spare you the agony of more sports jokes. However, nothing hits the spot like some shut-eye after playing or attending a sporting event, and we think the same goes for listening to us talk about it. So let Mattress Firm help you drift off to dreamland. Simply put, your budget stretches further at Mattress Firm. Head to mattressfirm.com/podcast to learn how you can turn your sleep into a true slam dunk.
Tip of the hat to Albert, another strong edition of MMQB. Did you know your favorite team has a daily podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network? Steelers fans, we have you covered with Locked On Steelers. Cowboys fans, it's Locked On Cowboys. And Chiefs fans, it's Locked On Chiefs. You get the picture. Search Locked On, your favorite team. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.